Go ahead and turn in your Bibles, if you will, over to the book of 1 John. 1 John. And we'll be beginning actually in chapter 1 here in just a minute. This morning I want to take you back to your high school or your college economics class. And you might remember as your teacher or your professor droned on about economic matters that he talked about something called leading economic indicators. With all of the problems we've faced in our economy in the last few months, that has been something that perhaps you've heard more on average than you've heard in times past. Leading economic indicators are the things that tell us which way the economy is going. Unemployment rate, inventories, sales rates, all of these things economists will look at and they'll say, based on what we have seen, we are predicting that the economy is going in this direction. And most of the time, they're correct on that. Most of the time, they can look at those things and they can say, yes, the economy is going up. No, the economy is going down. This morning, I ask you, wouldn't it be nice if there were leading spiritual indicators, where there were things that we could look at about ourselves and we could say, as the result of what we see, our faith is increasing? Or if we need warned, the things that we're seeing, our faith is decreasing, and we had better take action on that. This morning, I'd like to show you that there are such things. That as we think about spiritual indicators, we certainly do find that God has told us that, yes, there are things that you need to be looking at. In fact, He says things that are essential for you to be looking at, to determine which way your faith is going, to determine how really close you are in your relationship to the Lord. While there are many places in the Bible we could turn to for examples of this, I believe the most concentrated, and if you'll understand my term here, the most stark indicators that we can find are what we find in the book of 1 John. In his no-nonsense, straight-to-the-point, black-and-white writings, the Apostle John tells us there are things that you must focus on to determine whether or not you are in the right standing with the Lord. I appreciate the reading this morning. Let me just refocus in verses 5 through 7, where John says, "This is the message we have heard from Him and proclaim to you, that God is light, and in Him is no darkness at all. If we say we have fellowship with Him while we walk in darkness, we lie and we do not practice the truth. But if we walk in the light as He is in the light, we have fellowship with one another. And the blood of Jesus, His Son, cleanses us from all sin." With that in mind, this morning, let's talk about three indicators that the Apostle John gives to us. Things that we need to be examining to determine our relationship with the Lord. The first that I think John makes a very, very major point concerning is the fact that one of the indicators that tells us how well we're doing is how well we are keeping the commandments of God. We live in a generation that I suppose is not new in some ways, but yet perhaps in other ways is more broad than in past generations, that gives us the idea that if you are concerned about following the commandments of God in the exact capacity in which these commandments were given, that you are nothing more than a legalist, that you have not understood what the Bible is all about, hence you don't know what God is all about, because all you're concerned about is dotting I's and crossing T's. You ever heard someone talk like that about your faith? You ever heard someone say that what you are doing is a kind of religion that does not care about God? That the kind of religion you need is not so concerned about all of the commands, but rather the love that you have for the Lord. Legitimately, I suppose we can say that there are those who have tried to get to heaven on what they don't do. I don't drink. I don't commit adultery. I don't take drugs. Therefore, I'm okay. And miss a whole lot of it. Nonetheless, what we must understand is that when we think about the commands of God, our spiritual health is good only when God's commands are important to us. So as you think about that, this morning I ask you to ask yourself, what does this spiritual indicator say about your life in relationship to God? As you think about the commands of God, how important are those commands to you? Let me take you to a couple of passages to consider. In the book of Matthew chapter 11, this is what the Lord Himself said about His commands. He says, "Come to me all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." I want you to think about that command or that statement of the Lord. Keep that in mind. And let's look back to 1 John. Going over to chapter 5, listen to what John says about the commands of Jesus. He says in chapter 5, looking down to verse 3, "For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments." Now listen to this. Doesn't this reminisce of what Jesus just said? "And His commandments are not burdensome. For everyone who has been born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith." Now I have a question for you this morning. As you think about those dark times in your life, those times when Satan is pressing hard on you, when you feel as though you have been backed into a corner and the forces of evil are trying to take your soul from you, do you agree with the Lord that His commands are not burdensome? That His yoke is easy and His burden is light? Sometimes that's hard. Sometimes that's difficult when we see what God has said to do and when we see what the forces of evil are seeking to prevent us from doing. To say, "Yes, Lord, I agree with You that Your commandments are light. That Your yoke is not burdensome to us." But even in those times, I encourage all of us to remember that the only way we grow is by accepting that the ways of God in the long term are far, far easier than the ways of Satan. Even when those days are dark, even when the times are difficult, when we have the kind of faith that is grounded in the commandments of God, when we can say that no matter how it appears at the moment, in the long run, the yoke of Christ is far easier than what Satan would put us through. Can we understand that our faith is secure? That the spiritual indicators are pointing upward for us? And as we consider that, I would encourage you this morning to remember that that entails all of us to spend time with His book. When we think about the commands of God and when we understand the importance of these commands, it is of utmost importance for us that we spend time looking at these commands, understanding what God has told us to do. Think about what Peter said in his first epistle, chapter 2, looking in verse 21 and 22. He says, "For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you might follow in His steps. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in His mouth." When we look at the commands of Christ in particular, what Peter says is, He laid the example before you. He told you what you needed to do, and then He showed you by His life what you are to do. Do we spend time considering that? Do we spend time looking at those commands and looking at how Jesus walked? Look at what John says about that as well, backing up a chapter or so from where we were. Chapter 4 of the book of 1 John, we look down to verse 3. And he says, "And every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you heard was coming, and now is in the world already." I want you to look at the first part of verse 3. The spirit that does not confess Jesus. Let's turn that around to the positive. When we think about our life, we have to have the kind of soul that says Jesus is God and that Jesus has told me what to do, and I am going to spend time learning those things so that I can be more like Him. You see, when I take that attitude, the Bible is not a chore for me to read. It's not some checklist that I mark off every day. But rather what I find is the reading of His Word is something I understand to draw me closer to the Lord. That's what His Word is all about. If I ever come to the point where I say I've got to read my Bible, not in the sense of I understand it is life important to me, but rather in the sense that it's some kind of obligatory action, that if I didn't have to do it, I wouldn't do it. I need to understand where those spiritual indicators are pointing. But yet even with that, even when I accept the fact that the Word of God is extremely important for me, I've got to take it a step further. And I've got to say that for all the reading I can do, the only way that this book is going to help me is when I implement what it says. See, we can do lots of reading, and it do us absolutely no good. I think I'm about through with this point in my life, but there have been times in the past, you know, where I decide I'm going to become one of these really physically fit kind of guys. And I bought the book, and I read the book, and I show up at the gym, and it doesn't quite work. And I see all these other folks there who are so fit, you know, they're pumping iron and they're running 2 or 3 miles. Well, they read the same book I did. What's the problem? Problem's implementation. They were more serious about it than I was. They were more long-term in their outlook than I was. You know, somebody like me does it for a day or two, don't see any changes, and well, let's move on to something else. Not with those people. And I would suggest to you that we see that same thing when it comes to our spirituality, that there are times when we look at the book and we decide I'm going to be everything I need to be and I want to have my faith to grow, and we try it a week or two and we're done. We don't see any result from it. No, we can't be that way. God says to me, I want you to understand that for all you ponder and study and debate these commands, the importance is in that worn out expression of when the rubber hits the road. The importance is when I put these things into impact in my life. That's when the indicators point upward. So what does this say about you? What does it say about me? That as we look at our lives in relationship to the commands of God, where is my spiritual indicator pointing? Let's look at a second. As we go back to our economic example here, there are things that have all kinds of relationships in economics. When I start teaching seniors economics each semester, one of the first things I say to them is there's not a man or woman in the world who understands fully how the United States economy operates. There's a reason for that. Because there's all kinds of relationships involved in this. There's all kinds of things that can factor in on us. But one thing that does stand out very clearly is that there are certain indicators that can show us in relationship to one another where things are heading. I know, for example, when unemployment goes up, spending goes down, right? That's an easy concept, isn't it? When inflation goes up, fewer people purchase things. I would suggest to you that as we think about that spiritually, that is exactly what the Apostle John tells us. He says that your relationships, both in the negative and as we'll see here in a little while in the positive, have a very great impact on which way your spiritual indicators are going. We understand that the extent of the relationship with the world very much indicates how well we're doing spiritually. Look at perhaps the best known part of the book of 1 John. Over in chapter 2, look down to verse 15. John gives his warnings here about the world and worldliness. He says, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh and the desires of the eyes and the pride of life or possessions, is not from the Father, but is from the world. John says to us the extent of how well you are associated with God, or how well you are associated with the world, tells a whole lot about your standing with the Lord. I believe to get a full impact of this passage, we've got to understand what worldliness is all about. Some of you share the same experience that I do, growing up hearing lots of good preaching. I can think of so many faithful men whose lessons were so important to me. But one thing, either probably by my fault rather than anyone else's, is as I grew up, my idea of worldliness was very narrow in its focus. When someone talked about worldliness, you thought about what we call the bad sins, right? Drunkenness, drug abuse, prostitution, fornication, all of these things that the world considers, even with us on occasion, very bad things. But as I studied more and more for myself, I began to realize that that is only one small facet of worldliness. And in fact, I believe the part of worldliness that for many of us is more dangerous than any of those things, though they are very dangerous and bad, is when we allow the very wholesome side of this world to begin to permeate our lives and to begin to take over the time that we need to be giving to the Lord. I consider what the Lord had to say as He was explaining the parable of the soils. As He got to the thorny ground, He got to a point that I believe should probably be something we all consider. When He says, as for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. Now, a lot in this, but I want you to focus in on one phrase, the cares of the world. Does anybody in here think He's talking about prostitution? Anybody think He's talking about drug abuse? Anybody think He's talking about extortion? What He's saying is your entanglements, your alliances with the world are the things that can very well cause you very major problems. Look to the third chapter of 1 John, verse 1. He says, see what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God, and so we are. The reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know Him. Listen to that. Did you hear what John said? The reason the world does not know us. Do I see myself in 1 John 3:1? Can I see myself as one of those people whom the world does not know? You see, alliances can be awfully dangerous things. You ever taken a little while to study World War I? I believe that's one of the most complicated wars that has ever been fought in the history of mankind. And a whole lot of that is because this country said, I'm going to be your buddy. And this country said, if you're going to be my buddy, you can't be that country's buddy. And if this country can't be your buddy, that country can't. And before too long, all of these entanglements and alliances had pulled the world into a very bloody war. I'm going to tell you, that's the same thing the world does to us. If I am better known at the ball field than I am known in this congregation, I have made a faulty alliance. If I am better known as the guy who spends 50, 60, 70 hours a week working at my job rather than the guy who's working for the Lord, my alliances have entangled me to the point that I am quite known by the world. And I believe that's what the Lord is warning us about. He says, do not let that happen. And I understand that's a balancing act. I understand that because of our place in this world, there are associations that we must make. But what our spiritual indicator must show us is that I do not put any kind of alliance, no matter how wholesome it might be, before my service to God. I do not allow those things to pull me into a worldly outlook. That's what I've got to be concerned about. And again, I ask you, as you take stock of your own soul, where are your spiritual indicators pointing? Are they pointing in the direction that you are more concerned about the things of this world than the things of the world to come? Well, let's look at the other side of that. Because you see, those relationships are two-edged sword. What can be very bad on one part can be very good on another. And that's what John tells us. He says to us, if associations with the world are detrimental to our faith, positive relationships with brethren indicate our very good spiritual health. John, very much in his bluntness in this epistle, says your salvation hinges on your relationship with your brethren. Let's look at some of the things that he says that I believe bring this point out very clearly. Going to the second chapter, still here in the second chapter, look down to verse 9. John says, whoever says he is in the light and hates his brother is still in darkness. Whoever loves his brother abides in the light, and in him there is no cause for stumbling. But whoever hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he is going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. Look on over to chapter 3, verse 12. We should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own deeds were evil and his brother's righteous. Do not be surprised, brothers, that the world hates you. We know that we have passed out of death into life because we love the brothers. Whoever does not love abides in death. And we could go on and read even more of that, but I want to look at one other passage with this over in the fourth chapter, verses 20 and 21. Here John says, if anyone says, I love God, and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. Now, did you note the sobriety of that word? You look at the last part of that again. He cannot love God. It's impossible. There is an impossibility of hating brethren and loving God. It just simply doesn't mix. So John says, one of the very key parts of your walk here in this life is the relationship that you have with each other. Which might beckon the question, why are these relationships so important? Why is it that John, in such very clear terms, lets us in on that? I have no desire to put words in God's mouth. I want you to understand that. But as I think about the situation of the brethren to whom John was writing, there's some things that I think we should consider. The devil was assaulting these brethren. You look at the warnings that John gives about losing faith. You read all the warnings about the Antichrist's coming, those who are opposed to Christ coming in. You think about the growing threat of Gnosticism at this time. And we understand that these brethren were being challenged to the very starkest foundations of their faith. So why are these relationships important? Disgruntled brethren are some of the most susceptible to the devil. When we allow ourselves to get to the point where we do not have good relationships with our brethren, when we allow ourselves to get to the point where we exercise bitterness and rivalry and hostility, or maybe just plain old apathy toward these relationships, the devil's got us where he wants us. Because there is no backup. There is no support. And so John says to us, Strong relationships will help to keep each other strong. Look back to chapter 2, verse 10. What does he say? Chapter 2 and verse 10, whoever loves his brother abides in the light. Why is that? Because strong relationships with brethren help us fight the devil. Let me tell you something else I think is important. These strong relationships keep us from self-pity. Many times we can allow ourselves to grovel in self-pity when things get bad. We have some dark spiritual problem in our life and we begin feeling sorry for ourselves and we begin thinking, nobody understands, nobody cares what I'm going through. And before too long, we may very well give up on our faith. When our relationships with brethren are strong and what they need be, that self-pity can be kept at bay. I want you to consider what Peter said about this. Chapter 5 and verse 9, he says, resist him. Talking about the devil here. Firm in your faith. But then notice this statement. Knowing that the same kinds of suffering are being experienced by your brotherhood throughout the world. Why does Peter add that? Christians, you are not alone, is what he's saying to these people. You are not by yourselves in what's going on here. There are brethren throughout the world who are being persecuted. That's not the good news. The good news is they're surviving it and you can too. Don't ever feel like you're all by yourself. And when we think there is a brother or sister who is feeling that way, let those who are strong bear the scruples of those who are weak. You see, when we allow these relationships to be what we ought to be what they ought to be, our relationship with God is going to grow. So are we walking in the light in relation to our brethren? In the attitudes that we have toward them, are the spiritual indicators pointing upward in what we need to do? As we consider all of these things, what are the spiritual leading indicators saying about each of us? Which relation do we have with God? Are things going up? Are they positive? Are we following the commands? Are we keeping ourselves from these entanglements with the world? Are we encouraging brethren? Or are things going downward? In many ways, that's a question only you and I can answer for ourselves, but we had better answer it honestly. And if that answer says we are not going in the right way, we had better take action. You see, economists make a whole lot of suggestions that they don't know whether they'll work or not when the economy is going downward. God says if things are going downward, here are the suggestions, here are the commands that will absolutely make sure things are going in the right direction. We can have that peace and we can have that security. That God knows what He's doing. Which way is it going for you?